Hey everybody, welcome back to Pod Lasso, Talking Ted with Jess and Logan. I'm Logan.
And I'm Jess.
And this is the very last episode for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Of us talking about Ted Lasso.
I know, which is bittersweet.
We did it. We're at the finale.
I know, we finally made it. I almost can't believe it.
I mean, if we had stretched it out till June, we would have been like 1 year from when the actual finale aired. So, but we didn't stretch it out that far. So, and we were going to do it last week, but something happened last week. What did I did something.
Something happened last week.
Oh, it was the Oscars.
Oh, yeah, but I wasn't prepared anyway, so it kind of worked out. You're like, okay, I have plans. And I was like, perfect, I was going to cancel on you anyway.
And it works out this week. I'm actually glad we get to do this. Tomorrow, no pressure, I'm assuming you do not know this. Tomorrow is my birthday.
That's right. I knew your birthday was close. Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I get to pre-celebrate my birthday in my favorite fashion, which is podcasting and talking about shit that I love.
Yeah.
So, which I desperately need. Won't get into it, but the last 48 hours, I'm also on vacation this week. I took the week off from my birthday. The last 48 hours have been horrendous, including my car breaking down in Atlanta.
Oh, no.
On 285.
Oh, no. That's the worst. Like, literally the worst.
At 6 o'clock in the morning.
No.
It was awful. And the dog was in the car. And she was, like, terrified. And I was terrified. And anyway, we're back home. We're safe. The car is in the shop in Atlanta. And hopefully it's under warranty. So, anyway, that's not the way I should start the show. The way I should start the show is with a question, and this one's easy. What is your favorite series finale of all time?
Oh, that's hard. My favorite series finale of all time. I know which ones not to say. Fringe was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Fringe is pretty damn good. And it's one of the more recent ones that I watched like to completion and was like extremely happy with. I mean, the Ted Lasso one is really, really, really good, but I do have some issues that we're going to get into. So I don't know that I'd pick that one. I'm trying to think of what else has finaled out.
Well,
I'm not going to say Lost.
Yeah.
Not going to say Lost. I think that was not great. I don't hate it as much as most, but I don't think it was good either.
Yeah. The tearjerker moment does work for me.
Yeah.
But only like in the way that like I've spent a damn near a decade with these people. And it's like, it's really nice to see them all again, but none of this made any fucking sense.
No. And I do appreciate the symmetry. I like it. Eureka. Did you ever watch Eureka?
I did. I watched like the first season and then I like fell out of it and I just never caught back up.
I loved that show and I won't spoil it too bad. I feel like it had a really good finale where you felt good about where the characters end up. And it has that symmetry. You know how Lost has that symmetry. We open when we start the series when Jack's eyes open and we finish the series when his eyes close. And there's a very similar type of thing in Eureka. There's like an opening scene and they started the series with it and they end the series with the same scene. And I just love it when they do stuff like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in this episode, like mirroring kind of scenes. You know,
I need to remember the Mr. Robot finale. I feel like I should have said that one too.
Yeah, Mr. Robot's up there, but like it's also I'm at a place where, of course, partly because of Ryan, I want to rewatch that show so badly, but I really don't know if I can because it might just like wreck me completely. Maybe eventually. I'm gonna say, like, there are two that I absolutely love that people will just like point at me for, but I don't give a shit. I love the Office finale. I love the Office finale.
I will back you on that. I don't think it's one of my favorites of all time, but that their seasons had been down a bit for me, and they brought it home with the final season, and the way they do the finale is really, really good.
Yeah. And everybody gets a little moment, and like even the characters you fucking hate, you wind up just being happy for them. Like, you spend most of the last few years just wondering what the fuck Andy is still doing on the show. And he gets such a good ending that it's really difficult not to be happy for him. It's like, and Dwight and Angela, which the older I get, the less I'm like, oh, I hate Dwight. And the more I'm just like, Jim's an asshole.
Kind of. Yeah, but they also have their own moments. This is one that I can't watch. I can't tell you how many times I have seen the Office finale. I cry every single time.
Oh,
every
single time. When Creed is playing the guitar, oh my god, man. The other one that people will just say is terrible, and I'm sorry, I really like it. I like the Seinfeld finale.
Oh, that one I probably couldn't even tell you what their finale actually was. I've seen it, but...
Yeah, it's fitting for who they are. Like, people thought... I don't know what they thought it was going to be. And I get it's, like, weird that it ends with them all just sitting in a jail cell because horrible people.
That's right. That's right. I was like, I know we've, like, kind of talked about this before, too. And I can never quite remember because I haven't watched that one as many times as you have.
But I mean, and maybe this is another one that people would like shun me for. I don't know. I think Parks and Rec has my favorite finale of all time.
That's a really good finale too. Really good finale.
Like the last two episodes of that show were so good. Like just seeing Ron and Leslie like repair their relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's all so good. The like flash forward thing.
Yeah.
It is weird. I get it.
A little, but it was good. I wanted to see where they ended up, and I liked that we got to see that.
So, and it's honestly worth it for the death of Jerry, Gary, Larry. Like, Ben's like, I didn't know, like, what to put on his tombstone.
Oh my god. It's, like, the weirdest running gag of any show, I swear, but it's so funny.
But yeah, it's probably my favorite series finale, like, just ever. It's so perfect for all those characters. And, you know, they all just get such a great ending. But yeah, those are probably my three, like, especially sitcoms, my three favorites.
Yeah. I'll definitely get on the bandwagon with The Office for sure. The Parks and Rec one is good. It was really good. I don't know that I put it in my favorite. Fringe was really good.
Yeah.
I loved that show. And the way that they did the ending, oh my god, it's gutting with Walter and everything. I'm like, oh
yeah. Okay. It's one of those like shows that, you know, I appreciate that they didn't try to go back to it and have not tried to go back to it. Like, they've kind of just ruined the X-Files. It's like, I don't fucking care about the X-Files anymore. Like, I was never that big of a fan, but it was just like, oh my god, every few years it's like, we're gonna do it again. Like, oh god, whatever. I think the Breaking Bad finale is also extremely good, but
that's not what I've seen. I've not seen the show.
Okay. I won't spoil anything, but like, you get the series finale, and then like a few years later, they made a movie about what happens after the finale. And
I think I've heard about at least that occurred.
And so it's like, is that the finale now? Like, it's certain characters' final moments, but it's like, is it the finale?
Oh, I see.
But and then you have there's a spinoff series, Better Call Saul, which also eventually starts doing these flash forward things. It's set in the past. It's like a prequel series, but then they start doing like flash forwards to like where that character's at after the end of Breaking Bad. So it kind of works as both things. So like it's really weird, but it's done really well. But it's just like, I don't know what the hell constitutes the finale of that show anymore.
Oh, well, yeah, I know, because they technically had more than one. That was kind of like Psych. They had several. They keep coming back with movies.
Yeah.
It's like Psych. Just kidding. We're going to do it again. I love that show, though.
Fringe and Parks and Rec, they're two really fucking solid. Like, this is how you end a show. Finales.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I also really like the Battlestar Galactica finale. I know a lot of people don't like it either, but
I just didn't like the show.
Yeah.
I didn't really watch it, but
The Good Place has a great finale as well.
Another one I didn't really watch.
Yeah.
I've heard it's good, but I just am not sure it's really my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's really, really good. But you gotta kind of really buy into the premise.
And that's exactly my problem.
We've had that discussion. We've
had this discussion before, yeah. So
I get that. It's a fun show with like a really moving finale about death. I mean, the whole show's about death because they're dead. But it's like dying after you die. It's really like weird, but very moving. So anyway, yeah, I think we picked the two best ones, Fringe and Parks and Rec.
I'll go for it. 100%. I'm there.
All right. So Ted Lasso, So Long, Farewell, the very last episode of Ted Lasso, because I imagine if the show comes back, it's not going to be called Ted Lasso. I hope it will be called The Richmond Way, but that's just me.
That would be very cool.
So the opening. I know what they were doing, and like when it came, I was like, I hope to God they're not doing this, because there was so much outcry about like Ted and Rebecca have to get together. Like,
no, they're
destined to be. I'm like, what? Where does anybody see anything about these two people like being romantically interested in each other ever in this show?
I was like, please don't do this. Please don't do this. Please don't do this. Even though I've seen it before, I was rewatching it, sitting there going, this didn't happen, right? Did I forget this? This didn't happen.
Was this a dream?
This didn't happen.
Which I thought initially, I was like, they're going to make this a dream. They have to. There's no way we're going to like start the last episode of the show finding out that Ted and Rebecca slept together. And they didn't, because there was a gas leak in the little neighborhood that Beard and Ted live in, and everybody had to vacate the premises. So Ted, Beard, and Jane all crashed at Rebecca's place.
When Beard walks in, I was like, what is happening right now?
I mean, Brendan Hunt just fucking goes for it, man.
Whoa. Yes, he does. I was like, wow, that isn't imagery. Not sure that I needed. But there it is.
I love that he apologizes for the noise when he comes in. And Jane comes right behind him and is like, "You're welcome for all the noise last night."
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. She's so, I don't even know. I don't know how I feel about Jane.
Yeah. That's the one thing about a possible spinoff that I'm like, I don't know how much of Beard and Jane's relationship I can actually take.
Right.
But we do get confirmation Ted has resigned after the season. He'll be resigned as the coach of Richmond, and he is moving back home to Kansas to be with his family, which, you know, you kind of got where he was going at the end of the previous episode with his quote, yeah, big reveal. But, you know, I love the like subterfuge of the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. I love the mirroring aspect of it. You know, like for the last two seasons, Rebecca's had the big reveals, and then this time, you know, Ted gets his. And so it just, it starts to bring everything full circle. And I love it when they bring things full circle. I know a lot of people hate it when things are wrapped up in nice, neat little bows, but I prefer that. Like, I know that sounds weird, but I like it. I like it when they do that. But people say that's lazy writing. I don't think that's lazy writing. I think it's going exactly where you knew you wanted to go. And you're paying everything off along the way.
We don't get it in life. It's kind of nice to have it in our entertainment.
Yes. I think that's why I like it.
You know, things don't, you don't get closure a lot of times, and things do not come full circle. You're kind of just left there going like, what the fuck was that for? Like, and I'm with you. I like it when my entertainment does it. It probably gives me unrealistic expectations for my actual life, because I'm like, I need closure. You know, I do like it when my entertainment does that. And I'm a big fan of, because I think life does that too, kind of like patterns repeat, like maybe not always in the same way, but like things come back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to see in your own life.
Yeah. Or at least it definitely hard to see at the time. Like years later, I can look at things and be like, oh, yeah. I see how I kept making that mistake. So, yeah. So from there, we go to the locker room where they're holding court, which is like,
interesting.
It's not something we've ever seen them do. So it's interesting to see this for the first time in the last episode.
Yes.
That's a good way to put that. But it's still really, really fun. I love Isaac in the wig. Like, it's just adorable.
Yeah. It is pretty funny.
And we're talking about the references and callbacks. But, like, we see Nate back on the team in this scene, and he's coming around with a box to collect the fines that Isaac is levying around for everybody. And there's a really cool moment where Jamie gets fined £200 for falling asleep during team meditation, and he puts the money in the box that, like, the decorated box that Nate's coming around with. In season one, when they're collecting money for somebody's birthday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jamie puts gum in the box.
Yes. He's very dismissive of it and critical in season one. And he, in this instance, he even gives a little bit more and kind of like winks at Nate, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. That and his hat, like, I don't know if you noticed his hat too, but in early seasons, he's wearing that black icon hat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all the time. He's wearing a black hat, but it doesn't say icon. It says ICOG. recognizing that like he's not the only thing that matters. He is just a cog in the machine. I thought that was an interesting touch.
That is an interesting touch. I did not pick up on that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There's also a scene right before, right after this, where Roy scares Keeley in the parking lot.
Yes.
Which is a season one callback to when Roy scares Keeley in the parking lot.
Yes. It's
when
like
she closes her truck.
Exactly. Literally the exact same scene, just about. I was like, oh my gosh, I love that. That one made me giggle.
There's a fun office reference in the locker room scene where Nate calls himself the assistant to the kid man, which is, you know, it's Dwight was always the assistant regional manager and was always being corrected that he was the assistant to the regional manager.
Absolutely. I was like, whoa, did I just hear that right? I missed that one the first time around. That was so great.
And then we get a fun little scene in Ted's office where Trent has all but finished his book because it can't be done till the season's over, but he gives them an Beard and Ted advance copies and, you know, says, I can't wait to hear what you think. What is he says something about like, you can tell me where you disagree and I'll be happy to tell you where you're wrong.
Yes.
Which is such a Trent thing. I love it.
I love that line. I was like, that's fantastic. That's such a great way to ask for feedback. Be like, you can tell me what you don't like about this and I will kindly explain why you're wrong.
Oh, and Jane has shredded Beard's passport,
oh
which
my gosh.
It's funny, and I love that they basically have to, like, they paint themselves in a corner by saying she shredded his passport, and then Ted's like, well, it's a good thing you have dual citizenship. And he's like, what is it, triple citizenship, because the Vatican is a country, baby. Like, so he's a citizen, and, like, the 3 years he's been over here, he's gotten himself citizenship in the Vatican.
I had many questions about this statement and decided just to roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those Beard things, right? Where it's like, yes. So okay, sure, Beard. And then we get Roy coming in asking, how can you tell if a girl likes you? Which is a weird mirror to like Nate's stuff, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, early in season one he had he said the exact same thing, didn't he?
Yeah. It's the whole you can't thing, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, it's such a weird little thing for Roy to be in that position because he's so
Roy.
Like, yeah, sure of himself and everything. Even when he's wrong, he's so sure of himself.
Also true.
And then we go to there's also another funny moment with Beard where everybody leaves and Beard just starts like ripping the book, like ripping into the book, like just mocking it. And Trent's like, I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, I know. I love how he, like, because he's still continuing to say stuff. So isn't this the point where he just completely has to leave?
Yeah. He goes into the other office, and then Beard says something else, and he's just like, throws his hands up. He's like, I'll be back later.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, that's really funny.
And from there, we go to Rebecca's office to find out that Ray Rupert's getting another divorce. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. So I can only assume that means it's been at least a little bit of time, like at least a few days since they showed up at Rebecca's place.
Yeah, if that's true, I don't know. I was having trouble with some of the timing, I think, throughout this whole episode, because we go through quite a lot of time changes at different points.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was having trouble tracking it at certain points.
So I'm not
100% sure, to be honest.
But either way, we know, like, his relationship with his assistant has been, linked to the press. Bex is filing for divorce. Rebecca has no comment. And we kind of get to see how Rebecca has changed. Like, she legitimately is like, I don't care about his life anymore. I don't care. Like, you know, so much so that when Higgins tries to discuss replacing Ted, she's not ready, but he gives her some good news that, hey, we're in such a good spot. You could sell 49% of the team, make a substantial amount of money, and like use it for all kinds of things. And she's like, what if I sell the whole team? You know, I got in, she says something like, I got in this to ruin Rupert's life, and he's kind of just doing that himself. So, like, you know, why should I stay?
Yeah. Yeah, this was really interesting to explore, just like how far she's come. And so, I mean, she's, you know, gotten a full kind of character arc where, you know, she's completely changed from just like wanting revenge on Rupert to, like you said, acknowledging the fact that he's pretty good at ruining his life all on his own. He doesn't need anybody else's help. And so, yeah, we'll kind of see throughout the episode how she comes to terms with the fact that, you know, does she really need to hold on to something she only wanted to ruin his life in the first place?
So here's just a little side question. If that's you, and the answer to what would I get if I sell the team is $2 billion.
That's very difficult to walk away from. I'm not going to lie, but as we have discussed, she is already quite wealthy.
Yeah.
And probably is getting quite a bit of, I would assume, alimony or whatever Britain's equivalent of that is from Rupert.
$2 billion.
I know.
I think that there's not much I wouldn't sell for $2 billion.
Fair enough. But I guess that's why it's a TV show.
Yeah, like they could have made it less. That's just a lot of money to, like, it, you know, $200 million. Then I'm just like, oh, that's a lot of money. But maybe not for her, like, in that sense. But he's like, $2 billion? I know. Like that she spits out.
Yes. Speaking of callbacks, we did get a spit take.
So maybe... ? Moment of the episode is next. We get their last practice, and Ted tells Roy, like, call it, you know, like, you know, let's end the day. And we get the so long farewell performance by the entire team doing the Sound of Music bit.
Yes.
Which is just, every time I go to watch this episode, I remember this moment being longer.
Yeah, I thought it was too, actually, which is kind of funny.
Because it's only like 2 minutes, if that.
Yeah, and in the actual Sound of Music, they go through every single one of the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but they do the team in like big chunks, which is understandable because they have a ton of stuff that they had to get through in this episode. But I am glad that they left in like what they left, because I mean, this is probably for me the first like tearjerker moment. I was like, oh,
yeah, it's so sweet and so like perfect for this show.
Yeah, perfect for Ted.
Yeah. And I mean, and calls back a number of things that he did in previous seasons where he would get the team to like act out things, you know, like he got him to spell out "high boss" that one time in season one. Like it's just so, yeah, it's so damn sweet.
Yeah. Were doing an in sync routine at one time to "bye bye bye."
Yeah. For Dr. Sharon's last day. Yeah, that's right. At the end of season two. Yeah. I'm going to say I think it's weird that Danny is the last person.
I thought it was a little weird, too. I was like, why?
Yeah, why? Why? That's one question I would want to ask all of them. Why is Danny last in the musical number?
Yeah. Who would you have put last if not Danny?
We do get a fun Roy moment. I would have made it Roy, but it's better that Roy is on the sideline and we cut to him mouthing the words along to the song.
Well, yeah, because you know he's the one that choreographed the whole thing.
Yeah, and he admits in season two or earlier this season what a big Julie Andrews fan he is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like it makes sense that that's Roy. I mean, I would have had to do Jamie, right?
I would have said Jamie, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes the most sense that it's Jamie. Danny is adorable, like absolutely adorable. But every time I'm just like, why is he the last one?
Yeah, I mean, he is kind of, well, I guess maybe not. I would have said maybe he's the most like childlike of them all, the most innocent, since he's playing like, you know, it's the little 4-year-old girl that does that in the actual Sound of Music movie. So I don't know. So I guess I could see it coming from that angle. Now that I know that Phil Dunster's like a legit performer, I'm like, why didn't they have him do it?
Yeah, once you see him do stuff, you're like, it makes even less sense that it's not him.
I know, and it would have made great. I know, and it would have made a good bit of sense, like for Jamie Tartt's character as well.
Yeah,
to be playing, you know, to be kind of like giving that final send off, that final goodbye to Ted, but. It's Danny, so here we are.
It is still like Ted's right, like when he's like, thank you fellas, that was perfect, like he's right, it's pretty perfect. Beard wiping away tears underneath his sunglasses is fucking great.
It's so good, and I love how they just all go ballistic as soon as he's like that was yeah. I was like, oh my god,
fucking Trent like takes his jacket off, starts whipping it around. Yeah. Like what is happening?
Everybody's celebrating. It's so funny.
There's another brief scene after this where we get Keeley kind of walking through. Like she's there because she does PR for the team, but it's kind of this like bringing things together, and it ushers in another callback moment where she walks in from Ted's office. Like dressed more businessy than we see her in season one, episode one, but she does do the same thing. Is everybody decent? You know, the same joke, which is really cute. So
she's like, oh, one of these times. It's like, okay. that's really fun. But yeah, I liked that touch.
And it gets us to set up the moment with like him and Jamie, or her and Jamie, where he asks her to go to Brazil for this Nike shoot, which you can tell that's not all he's asking her.
Right.
And I like Nate's coming around collecting stuff. Roy sees that, and of course, like wants to talk to Jamie, so invites him out to have a beer, and Nate. It's like, are y'all friends now? Yeah. Like, how weird is that?
Yeah, I know. I love how he's like playing catch up because, I mean, he's been gone.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't been around. And so, like, I found that very kind of funny that he's like, oh, you guys are friends now. That's kind of weird.
And the bar scene after this is not the bar scene with those two. Instead, it's Rebecca and her mom at May's pub. And I love that we get one last moment with Rebecca's mom because she's so damn ridiculous.
She's so ridiculous. And can I just tell you that it kills me every time that she calls her daughter Sausage?
Oh my God. It's such a terrible nickname.
It's just such a weird pet name. Such a weird pet name. Like, I mean, come on. Like, that's so bizarre. But it's like so her mom. They do have a really good conversation, though. I did enjoy the twists and turns that it took. Although you do get some real weird tidbits dropped.
Talking about how she found herself after her husband died, and saying, and it turns out I am exceptional, like I was right all along. I'm like, oh my God, this woman.
down to the fact that she's meeting with a tattoo removal artist to make sure she understands the procedure in case she hates her tattoo.
Yeah. Like,
Rebecca, the look on her face is just like,
you don't have a tattoo. You're planning on getting one, but you're gonna find a removal artist just in case you don't like. You're already planning to not like the tattoo that you don't have.
Yes, that is effectively supposed to be permanent ink on your body.
Mm-hmm. Just go get a henna tattoo.
Or just don't do it at all.
Yeah, just don't do it at all.
She's the most ridiculous character, but it is nice to kind of like bid farewell to her. I do like, and you might be about to bring this up, but I do like that they mentioned the psychic again.
Yeah. Which I meant to look up all the, I know we talked about it before, but of course one last prediction does come true. But we'll get to that. Also her mom learning the skateboard, like that little, yes. She's like, Do you mean skateboarding? She's like, yeah, skateboarding. Like, you can't possibly mean skateboarding.
Again, the looks on her face, like, she's just, I love her acting in these scenes. It's so funny. So good.
I do really like the moment with May and Rebecca's mom. When her mom's like, I just want some peace of mind for her daughter, for my daughter and her whole generation. And May's just like, yeah, how rough they've fucking got it. Like, I know every generation feels that way about like the next one. Yes. But yeah, I feel that in my soul. Like, young people at work start griping about things. I'm just like, shut up. Like, I can't stream TV here because the Wi-Fi isn't good enough. I'm like, shut up.
Oh, my God. You clearly never lived in an age without internet.
I had to fucking record my shows on a VHS tape and hope to God that it didn't mess up or the power go out. So, shut up. You can watch it tomorrow on Hulu. Oh, my God.
Watch it live, or it didn't happen. I mean,
There's also a really, really sweet moment where the three hooligans come over and they've paid their tab, and they just thank Rebecca for being the, what does she say later, the matriarch of the team.
Yes, which is very sweet. But also, I love this entire exchange between them, between her mother.
Yeah. They're like, you're like the grandmother we never had. And she's like, no, I'm not. Her saying, they tell Rebecca, you're like the mom we never had. And Rebecca's mom going, that's really funny because I'm like the mom she never had. Like, she slams herself. I don't even think she realizes it.
I don't think she realizes it either, which is really funny.
But yeah, it's a really, really sweet scene and does a nice bit of foreshadowing for what comes later. Yes. So Trent watching Ted read the book, very short scene, but very fun. Like, I've never related to Trent more. Because I've been the person who wrote something and shows it to somebody, and then it's like, waiting for them to finish it. Like, I just want you to like it. Like, I did. That's all I want. Like, yeah. A child. Like, look, I painted this at school. Tell me you like it.
That's great, honey. It's a lovely dog. It's a horse. Oh, okay. Do a rainbow tomorrow. Thanks.
Yeah. Now the Jamie Roy bar scene. I could be wrong. Pretty sure it's a fake brand of beer that he's chugging, but I do know it's the same. Like, I think it's in season one when he talks about drinking a beer and he does it a certain way so that you can see his bicep.
Oh,
it's the same brand of beer.
Interesting.
But I think it's made up for the show. So I think you see them drink it all the time.
Probably. Yeah, it's like a fakey beer, so they don't have to worry about the
right,
like, rights or anything like that.
And they get to have a fun conversation about, well, first we get the Roy telling Jamie he's proud of him, which is, I mean, it's really sweet. And a lot of what Roy does in this episode, like, he doesn't realize, we can talk about it when we get to the moment, but he talks about still being the same person.
Yes.
And it's like, but you're not, man, because you, that person would never say this to Jamie in season one.
Yeah, no. And I their relationship is quite possibly one of my favorite things about this series.
And one of the most frustrating things about the finale for me, because I feel like they do so much to disassemble it.
Yes and no. I don't know, because they have these really good moments, like leading up to what will come for these characters, like after this scene. But
yeah,
I still don't feel like they've driven like a wedge between the two of them at the end result of it. I think.
Well, yeah, you're right. Because I mean, you know not I mean? To jump ahead, but yeah, when they get to Keeley's house, so what winds up happening is they both start declaring their love for Keeley.
Yes.
Roy first, and he's like, and Jamie's like, well, if it's not official, then I'm not dropping out of the race here, buddy. Like,
yeah.
I still have feelings for her. So, you know, I guess it's just going to be a thing. And it gets a little heated. And then before we find out what happens, we cut away to what's the next scene? Oh, Rebecca and Ted at the stadium. That's right. Which is such a fucking good scene.
There's more tears.
Interesting little, I don't know, fact, tidbit, whatever. This is the least amount of words Jason Sudeikis says in any scene that he's in all of Ted Lasso.
I can see that. Ted usually does a lot of talking. He does very little talking in this episode,
actually. He says, yeah, in this scene, he only says 7 words.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And if you go back and watch the scene, I'm not the biggest Jason Sudeikis fan. Like, I love this character. I don't love him in a lot of things. I think he's fine. But watch this scene and watch how much he's doing with just, like, his expressions. Mm-hmm. And it's so fucking good. Like,
it really is.
She's practically begging him to stay. And, like, he just, there's this one look he gives her where, like, he doesn't say anything, but it's very much like, it's breaking my heart to tell you I have to go, but I have to go.
Yeah. Yeah. This was an absolutely fantastic scene. I mean, watching it, like, brings me to tears. Like, it was well done on both sides, and like you could see the emotion on both sides, like,
yeah.
Too. I mean, it's not in these finales, this is where it gets interesting, because yes, they are characters and they are extremely great actors, but a lot of the emotion that comes through is real. And
yeah.
So yeah, it always makes these ones hit a little harder, I think. But I think they did a phenomenal job with it. It laid it out. She's like, you can't go. We need to, you know, we need to both stay.
Yeah.
And we can do this together. Like, you know, she's the most Ted she's ever been, you know, like she's coming up with all these like off the wall things of like how to make it work. And she even includes Michelle in all of this.
Who was like, a divorced. Teacher? Yeah. Did we know that?
Yeah, I had that same question. I don't know that we do that, but I guess we do now.
Yeah, I was like, she's a teacher, which I understand, like, maybe she obviously is probably a teacher at a different school, because it led, like, in my mind, I just started going to questions about every time they were having, like, discussions about their kid in school, and I'm like, yeah. There's one time where he gets a call about Henry forgetting his lunch, you know? I'm like, she must not teach at the same school, because that doesn't work.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, remind me, how old is Henry supposed to be?
Preteen.
So is he still elementary school?
When we start, I would say probably 9 or 10. By the time we finish, probably 12, 13.
Maybe she's a high school teacher, or maybe yeah. She's a principal somewhere, but not at or in administration. I don't know, because she specifically said department head.
Yeah.
And so, or maybe she's a college professor. I don't know.
Yeah, that's yeah. It just struck me as like, this is an odd time for us to find out what his ex-wife does for a living.
Find out that information. I agree. That is an odd time.
And I love that we get to end the scene on a joke. She says, "Fine, that's it. We're both gonna go," and she's like. Rebecca says, I've been thinking about traveling abroad. And Ted's like, oh, he probably loves style. And she says, more like drink, sleep, fuck.
I was like, that's awesome. I love Rebecca. I love Rebecca so much. Oh, she's so great.
And the scene after this is when we find out what happened with Roy and Jamie at the bar, because okay. They show up at Keeley's house, Roy with his shirt half ripped off.
I was like, no, they are not doing this.
Jamie with an absolute bloody nose. I don't love that they put a little bit of a wedge between Roy and Jamie. I do love how this scene plays out, though.
What? Okay. I'm going to come at it from a different perspective because I'm a woman. So I'm team Keeley all the way here.
Oh, they're me too.
Yeah. They're like both like show up and I'm like, they're not doing this. They're not doing this now. They're not going to do this. And they sure enough do. They're like, you got to choose. She's like, oh, I get to choose.
That's why I love it. I'm like, I hate that you do this to Roy and Jamie, but I love that you basically like bump them down to like, no matter how much they've grown, they're still two idiots who think they're in love. And they're just like, well, you got to choose one of us. Well, neither one of you assholes. Get out of my house.
Yeah. Which I think is like ultimately what I love about this. I was like, oh, y'all are so, you're such idiots. Like you just shot both of yourselves in the foot. Yep. And I love that like Roy acknowledges that the second the door shut, he's like, we're idiots. Yes. Then, yes, you are.
Jamie's like, are you hungry? He's like, well, you're, after he took him out for a beer, he's like, well, you're training, so you can't eat, but you can watch me eat.
No, I love it that the very end, Jamie's like, I'm ordering chicken.
I'm ordering chicken.
It's like this poor guy.
And so after this is Ted finally leaving the office or the stadium and walking by the locker room and seeing Nate staring up at where the Believe sign used to be. And he scares
this scene.
Absolute shit out of Nate, which is so good.
It's so good. Oh god, this scene kills me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, For me, this is the absolute. I do have one problem with the scene, and we may disagree here.
With this one?
Yes.
Okay.
I do love the scene, and I am in tears almost the whole fucking time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like Nate trying to apologize, like Ted cutting him off. And then, you know, Nate just has his, like, finally gets it out. All tears, hugs Ted. It's fantastic. Oh, God. I struggle because I'm like, I do feel like Ted owes Nate some kind of, I don't know if apology is the right word, but just to, like, I'm sorry if I ever did anything like that got misconstrued. Like, I, you know, because Ted never explains himself. And I know you don't owe anybody explanations, but like, you know, you were friends and he mistook a lot of things that you did. And, you know, I know Nate sees that now, but I don't, it kind of bothers me that Ted doesn't kind of explain anything.
Yeah, no, that does. Yeah, we're definitely at different sides. I don't think that bothers me at all, just because I mean, and I know we've talked about this, so I'll, you know, probably end up contradicting myself, but who knows? But like, yes, there were things that were like kind of misconstrued, but it's like, I feel like the picture being the sticking point has always been kind of like an issue for me with Nate. And like, I get it. Like, I get that, like, your feelings are hurt, but also it was like part of like his character and like the character development that he kind of had to go through is like, yeah, his own like hubris of like thinking that, like, you know, like he's so great and he's so this and he knew Ted so well. But in the end, it turns out maybe he didn't know Ted quite as well as he thought he did, because he was upset that this picture wasn't displayed in Ted's office. But for Ted, the more personal thing to do and the way that he felt about his relationship with Nate was more intimate. Like,
yeah,
a true friendship. And so he kept that picture at home, you know, which, and so I feel like, because of that, and because it was like a misunderstanding on Nate's part, and maybe Nate, I feel like it was all like around like Nate's character. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
probably not explaining this super well, but I don't know that Ted necessarily like owed him an apology per se, but I feel like if he had asked him in this moment, like, hey, like, I'm sorry about everything that happened, but what gives, like, with the picture? Like, if that really was still, like, in his head and that really was the breaking point, I don't think that was the breaking point. I think it's just what he threw in Ted's face because it was convenient.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah. And it probably says more about me personally than, like, the actual characters that, like, I'm like, I want the explanation, or I want to give the explanation, you know?
Fair.
I was okay
with it not being there.
Yeah. And honestly, it really, I don't think, bothered me until the last time I watched the episode. I was like, oh, I really wish Ted had stepped in and said, you know, I just want you to know that, like our friendship does really mean something to me. But I think also Nate realizes that now without Ted having to explain that.
Yeah. And I think that's what this moment was meant to be.
Yeah. And I love that Ted gets to tell him, like, hey, you know what's funny? You tore it down and ripped it up once, but I ripped that sucker up multiple times.
I absolutely love that. I thought that was hysterical. I was like, that's fun. That's cool.
Yeah, and then the both of them, like, you know, he says, but it's weird. If I stare at it, it's like I can still see it. It's like it's still there. And Nate's like, yeah, me too. which gets called back at the end of the episode.
It absolutely does. But I will say, the first time watching this, and then when we see what Nate's looking at, and then we see that the sign is gone, mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, the sign is gone.
Yeah. I had forgotten. I feel like they go out of their way once, like, because Ted has that moment in the locker room where it falls and everybody freaks out. And he's like, it's just a piece of paper, and, you know, and he rips it up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the show goes out of its way so that you don't see above that door frame after that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it would be noticeable that it's gone.
Yeah, it would. Absolutely.
So game day, cut to game day right after this. There's a lot of fun things about the lead in to the game. A lot of characters that we've seen briefly come back. Yes. Shannon, the young girl who, like volley, or what, I don't know what you, it's not called volley in soccer, right? Where the young girl outside the, restaurant, like, yes, from the start of the show, that goes back and forth with the ball with him.
Yes.
She and her and a friend are, like, getting tickets to the game. The old couple from the Rainbow episode, yes, like, we see them taking their seats. Rebecca's ex and his, like, new fiance, are buying tickets. Colin's boyfriend has tickets waiting for him. Like, all of it, it's just, it's really, really fun, like, callbacks to characters we've only seen, like, very, very little of.
Yeah, no, I liked this. I like, they layered quite a lot in this episode of, like, kind of trying to tie it all together. And I appreciated all the little touches.
And we also get to see a bunch of people that are watching the game, including Dr. Sharon. We may or may not see Jamie's family. I don't remember. I know we see Ted's family.
Yeah, no, not watching the game. We get a moment with them later.
I know we see Ted's family and
Dr.
Douchebag, excuse the, but I, like, in my notes, that's all I put down is Dr.
I know. He drove me crazy. In my head, these scenes occurred before the finale, and I kept, like, waiting for them. I was like,
yeah,
where are these scenes? I guess they're the finale.
Yeah, it's, it definitely drives home the point that Dr. Jacob is, like, an not asshole. The guy. Yeah, he's just a straight up asshole. Like, I get it when you do it. Like, if it's just him and her, like, I get it. You're a little insecure. That's her ex-husband. You're not insulting this kid's dad, but you're insulting what he does.
Yeah.
You know, like, the sport, and a sport that the kid's excited about. It's so shitty.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a little low of him personally.
So then we go from there to Ted in the office ranting about, once again, something he does not fucking understand about football in this country is all the different names of the leagues, which is really, really funny.
It is really, really funny. He kind of has a point.
Yeah. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. It doesn't really make sense. Well, sorry, money.
Yeah, that's so it's really funny because, like, while I was watching the finale, I was also hooked on another show that I've mentioned 100 times before, Welcome to Wrexham. And there is an entire thing of Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds breaking down the leagues and, like, basically making Ted's point of, like, why is this called the Champions League, and this is called the Championship League, and this is called the Premier League, and this is like, none of this makes any sense. It's like, because you don't want anybody to feel bad about the league that they're in. So we got to make them all like really, really positive names.
Oh my gosh.
Nate comes in to, you know, tell him good luck and gets an awkward Nate moment. It's very much like the old Nate is back, like OG season one Nate, like just rambling, and it's really, really cute.
It just made my heart happy. I was like, oh, thank God. We're back. I don't have to hate you anymore.
And then Roy comes in and asks to be a diamond dog.
Oh, God, tears. I was like, no, my God.
It's such a great moment. Like Trent trying to excuse himself and Ted just being like, nope, you're part of the group now. And Roy just kind of venting and talking about how he hasn't changed, which, like I said, flies completely in the face of everything we've seen from him this season, but definitely in this episode. You know, and even recognizing when he's being the person he doesn't want to be, maybe a little too late, but still recognizing it and going like, fuck, I'm an idiot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and it, like, it's kind of the point, like, in some ways, like, he is sort of the same person. Like, he, you know, what he's hung up on is everything with, like, him and Jamie and Keely and the whole, like, love triangle, and the fact that, you know, they basically, like, duked it out over this girl without even considering the fact that it's her choice, not theirs. Like, you know what I mean? And so I think in that way, and that's what he's really feeling. He's like, I haven't grown at all. Like, I'm not any different at all. I'm just the same person. But I agree with you. Like, he's definitely not the same person. Like, the fact that he can see that, can recognize that, alone, and there's many more, you know, like, points of, like, where he's grown, but, like, that alone just kind of shows how far he's come since season one.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of agree with what everybody said, like, all their advice, but, like, it's Higgins that's probably the most accurate. You know, it's not about whether you can change, it's about, you know, just trying to be better. Like, and trying to be better is, that's just what you want to do, is try to be better.
Exactly.
The discussion of the perfection thing is pretty, like, they go on this little rant about, you know, you can have perfect this, perfect that, you know. I forget all the things they reference, but I know Shawshank is in there because that's my favorite film of all time. Billy Joel's A Stranger. I think Roy's like, that's a perfect album. But it is Trent's hair is perfect.
They list a lot of things. This is kind of a long runner, but they go through a ton of stuff before they finally come back to the point of, okay, but people.
Yeah, perfection is boring. It's not about being perfect. It's just about trying to be that. Like, when you know better, you do better. Like, that's, you know, the important thing, you know, recognizing, oh, hey, that was fucked up. I shouldn't be like that and not doing those things, or at least trying not to do them. So we found out Rupert has hired George back, which explains why he's not with the other pundits at the beginning.
Yes.
And so that's interesting.
It's definitely interesting, but not surprising. I mean, they were, you know, thick as thieves.
Yeah.
And so, of course, like, when he's in a bind, who else is he going to go to? That totally makes sense to me.
It's so funny because, like, at the start of the show, Richmond is not doing well.
True.
That guy's the coach. Like, he was your coach. Like, I'm always blown away when, like, coaches fall. I'm like, he wasn't doing well at the last job. Like, what? How is he still getting work? But Rupert is like full on Vader in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just like, I swear to God, they must have shown him, like, this is Vader walking around in Star Wars. When you walk, you have to walk like this.
That's pretty funny. That's true. I didn't immediately put two and two together. Maybe it's like the duster. It kind of looks like the cape.
Yeah.
and the way he walks.
There's a scene in a previous episode where we see him in his office, and it very much looks like it's on the Death Star.
Oh, yeah, it kind of does. That's true.
But yeah, it's Rupert in this episode is just such a, like, I've never been happier about what happens to somebody.
I know. Yeah, he's definitely a character that I love to hate.
We do get one final Zava.
I forgot about this.
So I love how they do it. Will comes in and says, guys, we got a care package from Zava. And I think it's Danny's like, no, I'm not going to let him break my heart again. But then Will opens the box. He's like, oh, it's t-shirts. And Danny says, I'll take two.
Yeah. I thought that was hilarious.
And he sent an avocado, to which Jamie says, he sent one avocado, and Will lifts it up out of the box. And it's the size of a medium child, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like a 14-pound avocado.
I know. It was way bigger than, like, any watermelon I've ever seen. Like, it was an absolutely enormous avocado. It's just so ridiculous. It's like, avocados can't be grown that large. Like, it's not physically possible, but it's just so Zava.
Then we get the thing that we alluded to last week. Zorro or Van Damme gets a new face mask that's totally black, and everybody's like, you look like a superhero. And he promptly tells Ted that he's going by Zorro now, not Zorro and not Van Damme, but Zorro. So we were a little ahead of the joke. So, yes. But like, I'm with you. It would have felt more in place in the previous episode, but I'm at least glad that they got there.
Yes. I forgot that they got there. Clearly.
Oh, okay.
I think I forgot about it because, like, when we were talking, I was like, or maybe I was like, didn't they do this? And I was like, wait, why didn't they do this? Like, maybe, like, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, cause I only ever watched season three through once. And then so rewatching it while we've been talking about it is only the second time I've ever been seeing any of these episodes. And so I think there's a lot from this finale that I just straight forgot.
Yeah. I've probably only watched this twice. I think watching it this past week was the third or maybe fourth time I've watched it.
Yeah.
I have a hard time watching when I rewatch shows, I generally skip the finales unless I'm just like, oh, I need some catharsis, because usually I wind up crying.
Well, half of this season is I've wound up crying. So.
Especially the last like three or four episodes.
Oh, God.
So the game does the match. The first half does not go well. They go down 2-0, like, not quickly, but in the scheme of the show, very quickly, they're down 2-0 at the half.
Yeah.
I forget about Beard showing him they don't give him a pregame pep talk. Beard makes a video.
Yes.
That is just like a look back at their years together, which is a very interesting way for the show to do a miniature clip show inside of the show.
I was just thinking that. I was like, oh, they even fit in a clip show. It made me laugh. I did think it was well done, though. I liked the moments that they picked out. It was good, but unfortunately, I like that
we got to see some stuff that we haven't seen. Like, there was very clearly the actors, not their characters, like hanging out outside of.
Oh yes, yes, yeah. Yes. That was very cool. I like with the amusement park stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was a really, really cool thing to include. Like, it's only for a minute, but it's just like it makes it always feels nice to know that the people in this show that you love each other.
Yeah, that they got along, and yeah, and that it went well. Yeah, no, I loved that. I loved that touch. I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, that probably was real.
At least all them standing on the field right before the game fucking crying.
Yes.
So
this is an interesting way to start a match. I don't think I've ever done that. There was a lot of talk about vomiting.
I was reading some trivia about the episode. This is actually based on something that really happened.
Really?
The guy, I can't remember his name, but he's the real coach that we've seen in previous episodes of their White Whale team.
Man City.
Yeah. Because that guy's a real coach. So yes. He did this to one of his teams, like made a video, showed it to him before the game. They were not crying on the field, but they were very emotional in the first half of the game and went down 2-0. Like, this is ripped from the headlines. So, absolutely based on something that really happened. I mean, spoilers, they wound up winning the match too, much like Richmond will do shortly. So they go in half down 2-0. Ted does not really have, even though Beard preps the team for a harsh speech with the shut your butts and sit your mouths down, which is really funny. It's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Ted gets even more emotional talking about what the team's meant to him and how much he loves them and how proud he is of them and having watched them, like the men they were versus the men they've become. And it's just fucking devastating. I don't think it's the most emotional speech we've gotten in the locker room from Ted. Season one fucking crushes me every time. The finale, that just crushes me. But this one's pretty damn good.
It was good. I don't have much else to say.
I think the reason it's not Ted's best speech is because of what happens next. Yes. Is fucking incredible. Talk about things I did not ever see coming in the finale. Like, so Ted's like, does anybody have anything else? And Sam raises his hand and then reaches behind him to get the picture of the national team. And we see that he stored that piece of paper from the belief sign, like behind his picture. But then we see Jamie has a piece, and his is in the fucking book that Ted gave him.
And the tears started.
And then Isaac has a piece, and Isaac's is in the sleeve of his captain's badge. And like one by one, everybody brings up a piece of the believe sign.
Including the people that had it in their shin guards.
Yeah. Which I'm like, that would be so wet. That paper would be so wet.
So gross. But we'll just look over that for now. We'll just pretend it was between the right. sock and the plastic part.
And just one by one, like it's Oh my God. Like, it's one of the greatest moments, like, in television.
Yes.
In hindsight, it seems obvious that that's where they're going. But, like, it just became such a non-thing with the belief sign. Like, that I never saw it coming. And, yeah, the first time I watched it, I fucking died.
Oh my gosh, yes. This part absolutely is one of the ones that like absolutely kills me. Like it's so good. It's so well done. I never saw it coming. I never saw it coming. And maybe I should have. Like, I mean, even now, I'm like, we've just like rewatched the season and I'm racking my brain going, wait, when did the sign come down? What happened to it exactly? Yeah. And like, you know, and I, obviously like, I mean, it got ripped up and I kind of forgot it, but like to your point, like they purposely have not shown it.
Yeah.
Like so that it wasn't obvious that it wasn't there. Like I completely forgot about it. And then they start pulling out all the pieces. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And then they put it all back together. Oh.
And I love that they get a joke in there of like, oh wait, we have to reassemble the pieces to make the sign.
I know, which was funny. But then I think one of my favorite moments is while the team is assembling it, just Ted and Nate connecting.
Yep. It's so perfect. Yes. It is a perfect moment in the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of like everybody pulls back. And you don't get to see it, but you get to see Ted's face. And he goes, there it is. There's number four, which is a callback to something from like earlier this season, but from episode like 5 or 6, like early season.
Yeah, it was a good callback. But yeah, it's like, and there's number four.
It might be later. It's when he's coming up with like these principles, you know, and he's got three, but he doesn't have number four, and everybody keeps suggesting what four is. He's like, yeah, that's great, but that's not number four.
Yeah.
Number four is believe. And you know, he says, you know, Isaac hands in, and we get, it's hard to even say it. It makes me want to cry. Ted, who's from Kansas, say, you know, a lot of people say there's no place like home, but there aren't a lot of places like AFC Richmond either. And it's so fucking good.
It is so good. Oh my God. So good. It's all of this, everything about this, this whole scene.
And you know, Richmond on three, and they're back in the game, playing the football that we've seen them play. We definitely find out they've won, what does he say, 16 straight games, which is incredible.
Something astonishing. Yeah, it was a lot.
And Jamie scores, like, off the bat. We get to see Jamie score. Well, they take a few shots on Colvin to get bounced back, which is great, until Jamie finally scores. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of cuts to Dr. Jacob and Ted's family in this kind of sort of montage,
yes,
of him making all these like snide ass remarks and are just looking and scrolling through his phone. Mm-hmm. Which might be worse than the snide remarks. I feel like every time we cut to them, he is less part of the group.
Yeah, well, he slowly but surely shifts over to the bar.
Yeah.
And he is kind of like not even really saying anything.
Right after Jamie scores, he gets fouled and we get a penalty shot, to which he, of course, gives it to Danny, like, because he's grown, so he's not going to take the shot. Danny is probably the best kicker they have.
Mm-hmm.
Danny probably gives it to Isaac.
I know. Which I think everybody was like, wait, what?
Who, like, Isaac is the captain, but Isaac is not a goal scorer. Like, I don't think we've seen Isaac score a goal at all in this show, except no. maybe when he was playing those kids outside the apartments.
Oh yeah, that's true. Probably then, yeah.
And even Rupert's like, they're gonna let him kick? I would trust him to take an aspirin. Isaac takes the shot. I love Colin declining too. He's like, just take the shot. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I
know. So he takes the shot and they say he missed and we get the, oh no, like it flew over the net. And then we get the shot of them inspecting the goal, only to discover that he kicked it through the net, not over the net. He broke the net.
Oh my gosh, which is funny in and yeah. of itself.
I mean,
it's very on brand for Isaac. They've tried yeah. to drill home that he's like this like powerhouse with like a crazy leg, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things where I'm like, if the ball was on fire, maybe.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's almost impossible. But it's funny and it's cute. And the fact that he kicks it into the face of Rebecca's ex-boyfriend is yes. really great.
Yes.
Who's all excited about it.
You know, yeah. I love the couple of times after this moment. We see him.
It's just so a bloody funny. Face.
As Barbara promptly stands up and cheers because finally there's some blood in the game.
Yeah. Higgins' wife meeting Barbara is great. She's like, oh, do you like football? She's like, I prefer rugby. A lot more blood. A lot more men tossing each other around.
Yeah, I don't know what she's like. Yeah, there's not enough men being tossed for my taste or something like that. I was like, what?
So while they're repairing the net, because I guess that's you have to repair the net before you continue to play. Rupert comes down to confront his coach of choice to tell him to take Jamie out. Mm. To which he's like, I don't play. He's like, I got two guys on him. Like, I don't play that kind of football. I'm not going to do that. Rupert pushes him down on television in front of thousands of people, maybe millions at home, and pretty much seals the deal on, like, we can't have this guy as the front of anything because he yeah. is unhinged.
Yeah.
We do get to see a blurred out, another reference to, like the very first episode, we get to see his testicles blurred out.
Yes. Which was another good callback to the beginning of the series.
Yeah, and Rupert gets to walk off the field to Wanker, also a callback to early season one when they chanted that at Ted. So.
Indeed.
So play continues. They're on the defensive, not doing great, and it's tied 2-2. They get a goal scored on them, which is devastating, and Ted starts laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And Beard's like, what the hell are you smiling about? And he's like, 14 was offsides. Ted now knows what the fuck offsides is.
I absolutely loved this moment. I absolutely loved it.
And Beard has to pay him.
Mm-hmm. Another nice callback. Oh my god, it was so good. It was like, this was great. I loved that they had him finally learn offsides.
Yeah. And I love that he knew it and nobody else did.
That was the best part about it. Yeah. Oh, so good. So good.
Play continues. The goal doesn't count. 2-2. And something happens and they get a free kick. I don't understand what happens. Like, I've watched it a few times. I'm like, I don't understand the free kick thing.
Oh, Jamie was fouled.
So it's not a penalty kick.
No, the penalty kicks can only happen if they're fouled in the box.
Okay.
And that's called a direct kick. And then it, sort of. I mean, it is a direct kick because it's a scoring opportunity, but it's a penalty kick. Sorry. A direct kick means that the person who is kicking the ball can kick it at the goal and score in that same kick. An indirect kick, which is, I believe, what this one was, means that you have to pass it to another person before scoring. Another person has to touch it.
Okay.
Most fouls on the field are either the result of a direct or an indirect kick. I don't remember all of the rules between what constitutes indirect versus direct.
Okay. So it makes a little more sense now. I'm like, so it's not a penalty shot because he's not taking a shot on the goal, but it is like a free play. So he gets to pass the ball. And they're deciding what play to run. Like literally
it's a set piece.
Yeah. They're in added time. It's pretty much like about to run out. And this is it. This is all they've got. And Ted calls on Nate and then proceeds to illustrate just Nate holding an Oscar. And even when I watched this when it aired, I was like, I don't know what the fuck he's referencing.
Yeah, I wasn't sure that anybody else would get it. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this felt like a very American thing to be telegraphing, but
I think that's why Ted says, because he says, act like you're holding an Oscar. He's like, fellas, it's an Oscar. And then he says, or an ESPY. It's when he says ESPY, I think that they get it.
Oh.
So in season one, episode three, Nate devises this decoy play where somebody, preferably Jamie, will very like just loudly like give me the ball. Like, you know, I'm open. I can get open, like pass me the ball. Meanwhile, somebody else gets open, it gets passed to them, and they score. That's the whole play. And that's the play they run. And it fucking works because Jamie to Bumber Catch, then Bumber Catch to Sam, and Sam's the one that scores.
Yeah, Sam's open and he scores,
So, Jamie going, pass me the ball, pass me the ball.
I'm open. So funny.
And they win. They win 3-2 because that's it. Added time, over, blow the whistle, fucking celebration. I think the person I'm most happy for at the end of the game is fucking Colin, who gets what he wanted. He gets to kiss his man on the field with everybody celebrating. It's fucking great.
I know. I thought that was a nice payoff, a nice touch. I'm glad they put that in there.
Yeah. And Ted dancing. I don't ever know what to say when I see a grown man do the running man.
I know, but it's so great because we finally get to see him do it.
You see like 2 seconds of it in the video in the first episode, and that's it.
Yeah.
And you get to see him like full on doing it in this, and it's pretty great.
Yeah.
So that's almost it. There's one last series of scenes.
Oh, God.
Ted, we like cut to Ted at the airport looking at all these magazines. Through the magazines, we find out that Rebecca sold 49% of the team to the fans, I absolutely love that. We find out that Zava is coming out of retirement to play in the U.S., which is definitely a fucking dig at what's his name, right? Messi. Yes.
100%. That was all Messi's story. 100%.
We see Zorro has become is like doing like moonlighting as an actor, And it says like keep her to star in Jean-Claude Van Damme remake of
Oh, I
Escape to
missed
Victory.
that. Oh, wow. That's hilarious. I totally missed that.
There's something about a teaser of like Pep Guardiola, I think that's that guy's last name, starting a clothing line.
Oh, yeah, he's the Man City coach.
You see something about it's like a star fucker is born and you
Oh
see
my
Shandy.
God, Shandy.
Yeah. And there's also something that says you'll like this if you didn't see it. It says Jack Danvers is no longer daddy's little girl, which is an allusion to her not doing so well after all that shit with her and Keeley. So
Good. Not do that, but
yeah. I we get one last little dig at Jack. That's pretty great. So Ted buys a couple of magazines, and then as he's going to board the plane, because we hear a call for a flight to Kansas City. I know Kansas City's pretty big. I kind of have a hard time believing there's a direct flight out of the UK to Kansas City. I just struggle with that, but okay, I get it.
I'm 99% sure that most international flights have to come to Atlanta
Yeah, me
because
too.
we're the world's largest airport.
Yeah,
Just
yeah.
saying.
It wouldn't have been a direct flight to Kansas City.
It
It
would
would
not.
maybe a direct flight to Atlanta.
More than likely a direct flight to Atlanta. I mean, possibly, what's the big one in New York that
There's two, right?
it's
LaGuardia and
LaGuardia that I'm
okay,
thinking
yeah.
of. Possibly, but then I was thinking, wait, is that in Chicago? And then I could just confuse myself. Yeah, possibly LaGuardia, but more than likely, I mean,
JFK
wait,
is the other one.
JFK.
JFK, yeah.
That's true. But I mean, we have the world's largest airport.
Yeah.
They're coming here, I'm just saying.
That's,
They ain't going to Kansas City first.
if it's a direct flight, yeah, you definitely, and you're not going to Kansas City from like from Atlanta, sure. Maybe from Chicago for sure. From New
Yeah.
York for sure.
Yeah.
Not from the UK.
No.
Anyway, we get to see the Usy guy one last time, which is really fucking great.
Oh
Like
my
him like reversing, like, oh hey, you're Ted Lasso, like I can't believe you're leaving, like you're so great. When in season one, episode one, he's like, you're a head case, like why are you doing this?
Yeah. Yes, I know. I love this. And also, like, I recently had an experience with a person that I think like is this guy. Like in real life. I was like, he was British and everything. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's the bro. It's like the dude bro.
Did he call it
It's
an
like,
Usy?
no, he didn't say an ussy, but he just the way he was talking, he's like legend. He's like, let's go. Like he was just so that guy. I was like,
I love
with a
it.
British accent, I was like, what is happening right now? This is so weird.
So yeah, he gets one last picture with this dude, which is great.
So
And
great.
he's walking towards his flight and he sees Rebecca, like her back turned in silhouette, waiting for him. If anybody doesn't know, she's wearing the same fucking shirt that she has on when she meets him in episode one.
Is she really?
Yep, it's that like it's not, it's red, but it's not like that, it's like a burnt red kind of color. I don't know, it's orangey red.
Yeah, it's kind of orangey.
But she's wearing that black blazer over it, so it looks a little different, but it's the same damn shirt.
Wow. Oh my God, I love this
Which is
show.
freaking great, man.
The scene wasn't already bringing tears to my eyes. Oh my God.
And they get to have one last little moment. I love the rom-com reference.
Yes.
Ted's like that. He doesn't call it a meet cute, he calls it a leave
A
cute,
leave cute.
which is really sweet.
Adorable.
She, says she doesn't like being called the matriarch of the team. He says it's better than soccer mom.
Yeah, which is so true. So true. Soccer mom has such a negative connotation.
And, you know, it's just, you know, real emotional with the two of them, you know, both kind of crying and saying goodbye. You know, we get a hug and we get the walk away, which legit, first time I saw this, I thought that was going to be the end of the episode. I was like, oh, yeah, that's just going to be it. But no, it fucking keeps going. Keeps we get going. Ted on the plane, like, immediately lamenting the fact that he's doing this. Which is so good. He's like, coach, are we crazy? But I love Beard taking off his glasses. And you have to forgive my dog, who has just woken up from a 3-hour nap. But Beard taking off his glasses and just like clearly has been crying for a while.
Oh my gosh. The mirroring aspects of this itself. I mean, it's just a lot of what we did in season one, but in reverse. And I just thought it was so well done, down to him saying, I mean, they're sitting in like totally different seats, but then him being like,
yeah, they're in like maybe business class at the first episode. And here clearly it's like first class seating.
Oh yeah. 100%. And, but even down to like you said, like what he says, like, are we crazy for doing this? And then it's just the complete opposite, like reactions and the complete opposite of everything that happens. And so it's good. It's touching. I love the reveal of Beard. The fact that he's like, I haven't slept in 3 days. I've been so like torn up over this. I was like, oh my
God. I'm going to disappoint you. I can't go. I love Jane. Like, you know, and he's like, it's so funny because Ted's clearly like, shit, man, I wish you would have told me this 2 days ago. Like, right. Why are you on this plane? He's like, I don't think you can get off. He's like, I have a plan. And throws water in his face and then starts faking appendicitis, which is great.
I love how Ted's like, he's grabbing the wrong side. And Ted goes, other side coach.
Yeah, other side coach.
It's like this. It's like, don't you want to go with your friend? Nope.
So that is the woman, the flight attendant. That's the same one that escorts Henry when he goes back at the beginning of this season.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that's a nice little callback.
Yeah, I was going to say she looks familiar. I couldn't remember if it was from the pilot or if it was, if it's from earlier. Okay, so that was with Henry.
So then we get, yeah, what an asshole. He's just smiling, watching his friend being carted out.
He's like, bye.
So we get Rebecca leaving the airport and she sees this cute little girl who she seems to recognize. And like, if you're paying attention, you'd recognize too, not you specifically, just in general. It's the same girl that they use for younger Rebecca in it's episode 10. Where you see, you see her, she sees her kid self in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same girl.
Okay. I didn't realize that they had the same actress playing young Rebecca as well as dude's daughter. Okay.
Yeah. So she falls down, Rebecca goes to pick her up, and her dad comes running. He's a pilot, and it's the Dutchman from the Amsterdam episode. So that's we find out his name is I don't know how to, I'm not even gonna pretend to know how to pronounce their names. So because he says the little girl's name too, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know, Jelka or something. And it sounds bad just coming out of my mouth.
Yes, but now they have reconnected and they know one another's names,
and thus fulfilling the prophecy,
the final one.
So then we get this fun montage of basically kind of like everybody, right? We see Nate at dinner with his family. He's actually wearing the suit that Ted bought him at the dinner, or at least the jacket. It's that like gray jacket.
The gray one.
Roy gets announced as the manager of the team. Sam, we get to see Sam on the international team.
Yes.
Keely like running her KJPR firm.
Oh, it's not KJPR anymore.
Right. It's, what is it?
KBPR.
That's right.
Keely Barbara, I would assume.
Yeah.
I loved that touch. I was like, me too. Oh, I didn't notice that. That was nice.
We see this fun little cookout, like summer cookout at Higgins' house, with the whole team and their significant others, including the Dutchman coming with Rebecca, which is really nice.
Yes. And Phoebe was there with Keely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. For sure. Like, I don't know if that's a hint at anything or.
I don't
you know.
Either, but I like to think it might be.
Let's see, what else? The soccer hooligans all have one, or together all have one share of the team. Yes. Meanwhile, May has a stack of shares of the team. There is a fun nod to the Cheers finale in that scene. May looks over and sees this Native American picture, and she reaches up and straightens it. Sam does that exact same thing in the finale of Cheers.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I thought that was, because Cheers comes up a few times in this show.
It does. You're right. Yeah, that's a cool.
We get the name of the book, because Ted suggested that was his one note to Trent, was that it was never about me. I think you need a new title, and it's called The Richmond Way, right?
Yes. Loved that touch.
Yeah, me too. It's such a good book cover, man. Like, I saw that cover. I was like, I want to buy that book.
I know, right? Somebody needs to ghostwrite it because I want to read it.
Keely proposes a women's team, which is exciting.
Oh, my God. Like, that was, like, I think my favorite reveal of the whole finale, because I wanted them. I want that spinoff so bad.
Yeah, yeah. Roy going into therapy with Dr. Sharon, who now appears to just officially be the team's therapist.
Yes. Yeah, she had like an official title, AFC Richmond head of something psychiatric.
Yeah.
Something mental healthy.
And then we get Beard's wedding. Which is the one you texted me. It was like, yeah, I still have problems with Beard's wedding.
I have problems with the fact that Ted's not there.
Yeah.
That is my problem with Beard's wedding. You're telling me he wouldn't come for his best friend's wedding?
I mean,
please explain this to me.
So, A, I think Beard would definitely let him off the hook. I do think it's problematic that Ted's not there.
Yes.
I do love the scene, though. I love that the bus driver is marrying them.
Yes.
I love that we get to see the two people from the episode that we absolutely do not like, watching
with the
them
baby.
With their baby. Like, that's fun. Like, seeing Danny with the two women.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's funny. I do think it's problematic that Ted's not there. I'm with you. But, and I know I'm not the only person that has this theory. While I do think everything we see is, quote, true, because it cuts back to Ted in the plane, when clearly all of that stuff is happening in the future. Ted is, like, at some point we see him, like, wake up as the plane's landing. It feels like it's kind of sort of Ted's wishful thinking for all of the people that he loves.
Interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about that one either, but interesting.
Yeah. Not that those things don't happen, just that like that's Ted kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but
yeah,
dreaming about how they happen.
Because that does bother me that it was all like out of sync. It was like it felt like we had jumped ahead and then all of a sudden we're back with Ted like landing. Yeah. And so that's a part that I don't think I fully understand, but I don't know. I don't know that I want all of those things to have like quote been a dream, but I don't know.
There's one thing we do see in that sequence that I forgot, and that's you see this shot of Nate at a desk, like with this like small little brush doing something, and then cut to them hanging the believe sign back up.
Yeah.
And what he's doing is like this version of Kintsugi. I forget what it's called, but the psychic brings it up when they're at her house about the bowl, like, you know, bowl shatters and you mend it back together with gold, making it stronger. And that's kind of what he does with the sign. I think that's really, really cool.
Yes. I loved that touch. I thought that was awesome. Like, especially with them, like, getting to, like, hang it up and you can clearly see, like, you know, they're, like, coaching staff. And it was just, like, carrying on the torch. I was like, oh, I love this. Like, I would watch another season with this without Jason. Like, I totally would.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we also find out that Beard's first name is Willis.
Yes.
On the plane. Like, what the fuck? 3 years.
I know.
Yeah. Willis Beard.
The name.
Okay. That's and they do it in such a way, like 3 years we haven't known this guy's full name. And it's so offhanded.
Oh my gosh, yeah, blink and you miss it. Absolutely.
So I'm just gonna say I don't like the last 15 seconds of this finale.
Ted back at home?
Yeah, I love almost all of it. I love Ted seeing his son again. I get why we see him coaching the son's team, and, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to be a goldfish.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not just the last 15 seconds. Maybe it's only the last 5 seconds. Ted walking into the camera and just eyeballing the lens and cutting to that music feels really fucking weird to me. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't think it's bad. I just think it's a weird way to end this show. I think ending on Henry saying, be a goldfish, is better.
How does the series open?
With them on the plane, right?
Is it just them on the plane?
I think so.
I was wondering if this was like another mirroring thing. Like, you know how I was saying, like in Lost with Jack opening his eyes,
right,
closing his eyes.
It's just, I don't love it. I don't hate it.
Stood that much out of place to me. I liked getting to see that, you know, like he was kind of carrying on the legacy of being able to like coach, at least like, you know, like Henry's team. What I found odd was that he still came home to their house. They're divorced.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine he's got nowhere to go, but like when he goes stay with his mom or something, you know?
It felt a little off to me.
Yeah.
But you know, not as off as Ted not being at Beard's quote
at the wedding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we both definitely have our problems with the last 3 minutes of the finale.
Yeah. Which, you know, like there's always going to be something. But one thing we didn't bring up that I just wanted to touch on like real quick was just the fact that Keely's gift was a snow globe.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because when she earlier in the episode, she brings in a gift and she's like, do not open that till you get on the plane.
Yeah.
And I forgot about that. And then he opens that. Out the plane, and it's a snow globe of the Richmond Green where he was living. I thought it was great. I'm with you.
Yeah, I thought that was so great. And probably the exact same one that she had to buy back from. which just made me giggle.
She re-gifted it.
I mean, like, we never see what...
people appreciate that.
I know. Well, I mean, we never see what Beard gets, so we don't know if they're meant to be the same or not, because he gets off the plane, so we don't... He doesn't ever open his, or so we assume. So we don't know what he got, but I did like that touch. I thought it was sweet. It was another moment that brought me to tears.
So, yeah, that's... that, you know, it feels weird and anticlimactic to be like, and that's the end, but that's the end. You know, Ted's back home with his family. Everybody in Richmond is moving forward. We can only continue to hope that we're going to get to see that show, because as much as I love Ted, like, he's not everything. Like, I grew to love all the other characters as much or more in a lot of cases than I do Ted.
I would agree with that statement, and I would love to see it carry on in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if it will, but...
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of those people are tied up in other projects right now, but, you know, it's, you know, money is the solution to everything. So, you know, if Apple can throw some money at them, you know, that would probably free up a lot of time. Also know that anything we would have gotten by now was held up for almost, 8 or 9 months because of the strike. So, you know,
that's,
you know, if there were plans or tentative plans, you know, certainly they went on the back burner when that happened. So, we just got to keep hoping. In the meantime, though, what we plan to do is watch things that one or both of us should have seen by now and kind of just talk about them. I think I called it late to the party thing. Yes. Following the tradition of this specific podcast where we talk about things years after they started and are ended.
Yes.
it won't be an every week thing or every other week thing. It'll be an every once in a while thing. And I think I'm with you on your first suggestion being The Marvelous Miss Maisel, at least the first season. You've seen it. I have not. You have been telling me for 5 years to watch this show.
Yes, I have. So I'm going to make you.
Yeah. So that's probably going to be the first thing, at least the first season. I don't think we may wind up devoting a number of episodes, like a season, like one episode per season. Cause I imagine I'm just going to binge watch the whole first season.
I mean, you should be able to. It's on Prime. I think it's like 8 or 10 episodes per season, I think. And there's only 5 seasons. So.
And it just ended, right?
Yeah, it probably ended close to or maybe before Ted Lasso did. So
like last year.
It's been a while. Yeah. It had ended before Dragon Con because people were talking about it at Dragon Con.
Okay. Amazingly, I only know like 2 things about this show. And one is that she wants to be a stand-up.
Yes.
The other one is that it's set in like 1940 or something, 30?
50? Late 50s to early 60s.
I think.
Or maybe there's time spoilers, but not exactly. There's time jumps at different points.
Okay.
So it's either late 50s or early 60s or definitely both.
Okay.
And then I think we get some jumps, but
yeah. That's like the only thing I know about this show. And like some of the actors that are in it. I'm excited. I love Tony.
She's Jewish. That's very important to know.
Okay. So I imagine
you'll figure it out real quick.
Yeah. I imagine there's some World War II stuff in here.
I don't remember. Maybe. I can't quite remember. Just is it's comedic. I mean, it's not like a slapstick comedy. It's a dark comedy.
Yeah.
It's, and there's drama, but it's at the at its core, it's a comedy.
Yeah. I mean, so, there's so many people I didn't know were in the show that you wound up being like, oh, yeah, they're in Marvelous Miss Maisel. That I'm like, mm-hmm. How have I not watched this show? Specifically Tony Shalhoub. I love Tony Shalhoub.
Oh my God, he's so great in this, Logan. His character is so good. Oh my God, I love him so much.
I didn't say this at the start of the show, and not that it matters by the time anybody hears this, but I'm on vacation this week for my birthday. Maybe I did say that. And so I literally, because my car broke down, have nothing to do. So I mean, so I didn't have plans to travel except for like back to Columbus, but like now, literally, I have nothing to do except walk the dog. So, and play Spider-Man 2 on my PS5. So
there you go. Well, it sounds like you're going to be watching some Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yep, it's the number one. Like I've got like 3 episodes of shows, that I'm like current on, that I'm like, okay, I'm gonna knock those out,
yeah,
and then start Marvelous Miss Maisel. So I imagine by the end of the week I will have burned through at least the first season, and if I love it, then probably what will wind up happening is I burn through the entire show and we just wind up talking about the entire show. So okay.
Well, then I should probably go ahead and finish it.
Oh, you haven't finished it?
I've got like 3 episodes left.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to do that in a week. It'll be, you know, okay, a couple of weeks. So
okay, good. Because I also, you know how I like to volunteer for podcasts? Well, this one I was voluntold to do. And I have to compare and contrast all the different versions of Dune. Not including the written version. Just the theatrical and extended. And
oh, Jesus.
There's like 4 or 5 movies that I have to watch.
Does this include the sci-fi one?
Dune is all, it's only sci-fi. There's no, an original.
I meant the sci-fi channel one.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's the original theatrical, then the extended cut, and the two new ones. There might be one more. Is there one more? I think there's another one.
I think the one on the sci-fi channel was actually a mini-series.
But so, I think it's also considered the extended director's cut or something. Okay. Or maybe there's a director's cut I'm supposed to be watching as well. I think
there's 3 versions of David Lynch's Dune.
Yes.
And there was an adaptation that the Sci-Fi Channel did in like the early 2000s that I think is a miniseries, not a movie. And then now there's the 2 Denis Villeneuve movies.
Yes.
Which people will not stop telling me to see. And I am refusing to see for 2 reasons. 1, because people won't stop telling me I have to watch it. I don't. And 2, I don't like Timothy Chalamet. I just don't. If they'd have put Tom Holland in it, I would have went and saw it.
That's hilarious. On a related note, I actually do really like Zendaya. So.
Oh, me too. I like every single fucking person in those Dune movies. But I'm just like, I'm tired of hearing about them. And I don't like Timothée Chalamet. So I'm not watching them.
Well, I'll let you know if he's crap or not. Because I got to watch them all.
So
that's my next project.
There's something that's in the books that, from my understanding, is not in the movies. I'll be interested to talk to you about it after you've seen them. If you don't care about book spoilers.
I've read the books.
Oh, okay. So then, you know,
I haven't seen the new movies and yet at all. And I haven't seen the original movie since I was a kid.
So you
I don't
know,
remember a lot about it.
In the original, they don't do anything with his sister, I don't think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Maybe they do, and I just don't remember it because I also haven't seen it in a while. And I know it's a little different in the new movie, what they do with his sister.
Well, she's real prominent in the second book as well.
Right.
Not the first one. The first one's right. All about him. And then she, I think she's like born or something. Cause it's a big deal about his mom being like pregnant and like the whole thing. Is that all in the first book or is that all come out in the second book?
See, I never read the books. I found all this out by listening to a podcast and I was like, this sounds way more interesting than anything I ever knew about Dune.
The books are really good. I read the first two, and then the third book is actually about his kids. There's twins. It jumps. Like, book one is all about Paul, and then book two is about the sister, and then book three is about his twins.
I also think Frank Herbert should have sued the fuck out of George Lucas. After hearing about all of this stuff, I was like, oh shit, he just like was robbing people of ideas.
Yeah.
But I mean, he got away with it, so I guess good for him. But yeah, I found out about the twin thing on a podcast, and like the sister thing was like super interesting.
It's really interesting because, like, yeah, if you know anything, like, about, I mean, it's the whole thing with, like, the spice and his mom and, like, them being able to, like control all the different stuff. That I haven't read these books in quite a few years, and I haven't watched the movies I got in ages.
And but the idea that, like, he wrote the first book, it's weird because it was so long ago, and I'm like, it so mirrors what people do now because, like, people will watch The Boys and they're like, Homelander's so great, and it's like, he's not the good guy, like, what are you doing? And like, that Frank Herbert wrote Dune and people were like, yeah, Paul Atreides, and he was like, no. Like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Like, that's which not all, what I was getting at.
Yeah, which all comes out kind of like, I think, in the second book, but it also like takes on a life of its own, which I think is like super fascinating. Like we could do like a whole podcast on this, like in and of itself, because it talks about like how, you know, like religion gets out of hand. Not like
this whole like savior,
like they created the Messiah thing. Like, right, they, yeah. Like they created him. They created
fulfill a prophecy
that was
nothing to begin with. Like, oh, exactly. Somebody just said this once, and so to try to, I listened, zero interest in seeing these new movies, and I listened to this podcast because I didn't have anything else to do while I was walking, and they were going in depth about the books, and I was like, wow, this is way more fascinating than I ever thought this story was. I should read these fucking books.
No, the books are really good. I would recommend them. I only ever got, I think, like halfway through the third one, and I got distracted by other things and didn't like go back to it. But
he only did three, right? Did he do more than three? I know at some point he died and his kids were like, Dune for everybody.
Specifically his son. Yeah. I want to say he was involved with the first three, and then it gets a little interesting after that because there's a ton of like offshoots and like side series, and the new author, not his son, it's Kevin J. Anderson. I actually have a couple of books that he co-authored with the son signed. I got him at Dragon Con one year. But that's one of like those like offshoot like prequel series kind of. It's like the prequel to like how like way before.
Is that the Children? No, wait.
No, the
Children of Dune is a sequel.
That's
right?
The third one. So yeah, it's Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, and then there's two more in that same series, but I can't remember how to read the Dune books in chronological order. Here we go. This is what I was looking for. This is like totally random. Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune, Chapter House Dune. I'm not sure if that's like related or not, but then there's like the house book. So there's House Atreides, House Harkonnen, House Carino. And then it kind of, it gets real interesting. There's one about the Jihad, the Machine Crusade, the Battle of Corin, Hunters of Dune, Sandworms of Dune, Paul of Dune. So the ones that I have that are signed are Paul of Dune. And I think I have the Winds of Dune.
Those are Kevin J. Anderson?
Yeah. He's
good.
He like, is
he's
good.
He's a great writer.
Yeah. He stepped in and wrote it with the son, with Brian Herbert.
Oh.
They're not like connected, but they're like offshoots. Like it's kind of like, you know, how like Star Wars does, where it's like all in the same universe, but there's like, you get like three or four of them that are a connected series, and then it like goes on to like a different storyline, and it's like related, but it's not the same storyline.
Yeah.
That's kind of how these are.
I'm definitely interested in at least his original vision for, so like the first three books for sure. After hearing about all that, I was just like, oh, what? And also, I mean, if you don't know, if you've listened to me for any length of time, fucking love Star Wars. And like, it's always interesting to see George Lucas's influences. It's really fucking interesting to see something and be like, no, this isn't an influence. This is like wholehearted, like just, oh, I took this. Yeah. Like,
well, Frank Herbert died in 1986. The first five books, the Chapter House Dune was released in 1985. I don't know if he wrote it or not. Chapter House Dune. Who is the author on this? Oh, this one says it. Okay, so he wrote the first, is that five or is that six? Sorry. One, two, three, four, five, six. So the first six are Frank Herbert. And then in 99, that's when his son presumably took over with Kevin J. Anderson, starting with the House books, House Atreides, House Harkonnen, House Carino.
I think I remember that.
And there's
being
one
like
there's
deal.
Literally one released every year after that until there's like a skip in 2010. Then they started with Sisterhood of Dune, Mentats of Dune. I'm probably saying all these wrong. Navigators of Dune, the Duke of Caladan, the Lady of Caladan, the Heir of Caladan. That I think those are different series because they start skipping years.
Hmm.
Those are the most recent ones, the Caladan ones.
Yeah, I definitely want to read Frank Herbert's stuff because like that was one of the things about like I need to rewatch Lynch's, I guess, maybe, because like I don't remember any of that. Like,
I remember very little. I remember the starting blue eyes. I was impressed how they did it.
Yeah.
Like a couple of scenes probably from earlier on in the movie.
So what podcast is this?
The 42 cast.
Okay. So everybody go check that out. So I guess it'll be coming soon-ish.
I don't know. He likes to record them at certain times, and then depending on, I don't know, his release schedule he's held stuff for like a year at a time.
Okay.
Before like releasing it. So usually like if it's for like a TV show and the TV show is continuing, he'll usually hold it until like just before the release of like the next season. So like, you know, like we recorded the Superman and Lois like season 3-1 a while ago. But
okay.
He probably won't release it until closer to season 4 coming out.
Right.
That's usually like what he does. But when things finale out or when things like are older, I think he has like a different timetable for it. So I don't know how soon after we record it, he'll release it.
Hmm.
But we're not recording until sometime in April. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, the second one's still in theaters. I can't imagine you have time to go to a theater.
No, let's just say I'm also going to get creative. So.
Okay. I support this.
I know you do.
Everybody look into VPNs. They're amazing. but you can, if you do want to hear Jess talk about other stuff, you can check out the other podcast, which she co-hosts pretty regularly, Legends of Tomorrow. Not Legends of Tomorrow's Legends.
I don't feel bad. We do the same thing all the time. But yes, the podcast name is Tomorrow's Legends, which for many years exclusively only talked about the TV show Legends of Tomorrow. But clearly since that one was unceremoniously canceled, we had to branch out. So we just finished Jupiter's Legacy. So our full coverage of Jupiter's Legacy is out if you dug that.
Wasn't the old stuff way more interesting than the future stuff?
It was indeed. And that ending was mind-blowing. I didn't see that twist. I did not see it coming.
Yeah, I kind of hate that they didn't get to do more.
I do, too. I was like, oh, I wanted so much more.
Yeah. I mean, there's books out there. Like, Mark Millar wrote a lot. So.
Yeah, I think we're going to dive into the comics but as well. But the next TV series we're planning to cover is another one-season wonder with Robbie Amell, the Tomorrow People.
Yeah. it was, I watched some of it. I thought it was pretty good because I like Robbie Amell.
I do too. I never watched this, so I'll be a first watch for me. They've both seen it, but not since it was out.
He's also got a movie out right now with Stephen Amell.
Codate.
Yeah.
It's
sequel.
It's the sequel, which I think they just called Codate Part 2 or something very uninventive.
The first one was pretty good, so I'm hopefully this week going to catch up with the sequel.
Yeah.
Do you know what happens when your dog takes a 3-hour nap?
They want to play?
Yes. She's like biting at like my ankles, my fingers, my arms, my clothes. Like, oh my God, dog.
Why are you sitting there? Get up. Play with me.
Show me attention. Show me attention. So anyway, if you want to hear anything else I'm doing, you can check out xwingfiles.com. We'll be back soon-ish, probably in a month or so, I would guess. Take a little bit of a break. And
we're gonna all those Dune movies.
We're going to talk about The Marvelous Miss Maisel when we come back, at least season one. So, you know, spoilers for that, but possibly the entire thing. I have to go do something with this. I have a, not life-size Yoda, but he's like 3/4 of life-size Yoda. It was actually Ryan's, and it's sitting in the corner, and the dog has lately taken an interest in it.
Oh, no.
So she likes to go over there and like try to chew on his face. So it's pretty funny, but she's going to break it. So we will see you guys soon, and thanks for coming to our TED Talk.